Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is author Jean Charters. Jean was formerly a vice president of marketing for Viacom Television and the president of Charters Marketing, an award-winning advertising agency. In her travels to broadcast stations around the country, she worked very closely with numerous news directors, and although her book, her new book, which is called Yellow, is a work of fiction, the book reflects her experiences in the news media and tell quite a cautionary tale. Jean is also the author of a trilogy of books about Irish the Irish coming to America. The first one was Shanty Gold, the second one was Lace Curtain, and the final of the trilogy was Silk Stockings. Jean, welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm so excited to share your really interesting story with our listeners.
Good afternoon, Georgiana. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. I love that when we did the pre-interview, you started by telling me how you started writing books, which
yes.
was a little bit clairvoyant and a little bit unusual. Okay.
So why don't
you tell us about your dreams, about your great-grandmother?
Okay, I will. First off, though, when I was a very young girl, my mother said, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And I only had one answer, and it was always a writer. I wanted to work for a newspaper then. You know, I was like five. And at that time, she said, "No, you can't do that. You know, you won't make any money. Got to be like a nurse or a secretary
or
a teacher.
That's what we were allowed to be back in the 50s and 60s.
That's exactly right. That's
or you
exactly
could get
right.
married. You could get married and have children. That was your other option.
Yeah, which I did. But anyway, I kind of regret that now, because I looked at children today, and thank God, when children today have a really strong drive to be something, I hope parents will always nurture that, because that's how they're going to be successful in life, I think. But at any rate, I didn't, you know, I listened to my mom. And so I did get married. I had four little girls under six. And as they were, you know, getting a little older, unfortunately, I had to get a divorce from that marriage. And if anyone in any of your listeners are Irish Catholics, they know how tough that was. It was, you know, the first one in my family, and it was really a failure. It was really hard, but it was necessary. So, I got a divorce, and then it became very clear to me that as a single mother of four little girls, these kids had to get an education. So I started out, you know, as like an admin assistant to someone, and I realized that was not going to pay the bills. So someone once said to me, "You know what you ought to do? You ought to sell media." And I was like, "What's that?" And they're saying they sell commercials for radio or television. And I said, "Okay." So I got a job first in radio, selling commercials. And I remember my first day, I said, "Do I have an account list or anything?" And the guy gave me the yellow pages, and he said, "This is your account list. Go out, start cold calling." So I did, and I was pretty good at that, although I still don't call myself a good salesperson. I am not a good salesperson, but I am a very good concept person. So I was successful because I could come up with ideas on how clients could brand themselves and, you know, be successful in separating themselves from their competitors. After a time, I did go to television, and I sold television commercials. And then I was very successful at that. And Viacom Television came after me and offered me a job. I worked with them for years, and then I opened my own ad agency. And, you know, finally, though, back to your question, it was only at retirement that I really, really had time to write. So I started out writing for magazines and newspapers and all of that. And then I, who thought I would never, ever be able to do a novel because it just seemed overwhelming, I took a class. Actually, I submitted to the New York Writers Institute an idea for a novel. And I got into a very limited juried group, which was taught by the poet laureate of Ireland at the time. His name was John Montagu. And I got into the class, and he said one thing that was so important for me to hear, and it was, write what you don't know about what you do know. Yes, that is very, very good advice for any person who wants to write fiction. So anyway, I started thinking about that. And from the time I had been a very, very young child, I had had dreams about a woman called Mary Bowen. She was my great-great-grandmother. And I heard my mother and my aunts speak of her in hushed and very reverent tones. So I wanted to know more about this woman. And it was during dreams that I started having this woman come to me. And she was young. She was very, very vibrant. She had long, curly red hair. She was riding a bareback horse along the west coast of Ireland. And I just kind of fell in love with the woman. Later in my dreams, when I was probably like 20, she came to me and she said, write my story. And somehow I instinctively knew that this was Mary Bowen, the woman that my mother and my aunts had spoken of, and the woman who was my great-grandmother. But where did I begin? How do I start? None of the people in my family knew anything about her other than the fact that she had come over to America during the Great Irish Famine in the mid-19th century. But she kept coming to me and saying, write my story. So I went to Ireland on my first trip. I've been back there 6 times since. And I started researching about Mary Bowen. Now, my family spelled her name B-O-L-E-N. When I got to Ireland, there is no one in Ireland called B-O-L-E-N. It's not even an Irish name. So I figured that, you know, she was illiterate when she came over, and that, you know, when they asked her name, she said Mary Bowen, and that's how they spelled it. So it went down that way. However, when I got to Ireland, I couldn't find anything about her. And so I was in a town called Kinsale, which is right on the Irish coast, and was just the most beautiful town I've ever been to. And I saw a store called Boland's, B-O-L-A-N-D. So I thought, oh, okay, that gave me a little more information on what her name might have been. And there's also, in Ireland, there are people that spell their name B-O-Y-L-E-N, but I figured if she had said Boylan, they would have spelled it differently. So I settled on the fact that her name was Mary Boland. And I sat down and start. I was in my 60s when I finally got to it, but I sat down and started writing Shanty Gold, which was my first novel. And it is the story of Mary Boland, a 13-year-old girl whose parents are both, well, her mother is dead, and her mother died of the famine. Her father had gone to Boston in order to send money back to the family, but they never got it. So this little girl had to number one, get herself to Cove, which is COBH, but it means Cove. But at that time it was called Queensland because the Brits had changed the name. Anyway, she had to get herself over to Queensland and get herself on a ship to come to America. Her only other option was certain starvation in Ireland. And so that began the story of Shanty Gold, this little girl getting on a coffin ship. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. While you were writing this, right?
Yeah.
As you were writing it, did you have any sense of or awareness or communication with your great-grandmother? Was she kind of cheering you on, or what was going on there?
I swear by all that's holy on my children's lives, she continued to come to me in dreams.
Oh, tell us about that. So as you're writing the book, I mean, what was her response to the whole thing?
Well, it was, I would write something. At one point, I think I had Mary Boland have an abortion. And that night in my dreams, the same red-haired girl came to me and said, nope, that's not right. So I mean, honestly, she did inform me through dreams as to how her life went. And I just hope that I got it right. I think I got close. I'm sure there were, you know, I'm sure that there are some things that are probably not correct in the book. I mean, you write almost 400 pages about somebody. I guess you're going to make a few mistakes. But I have a feeling that I got pretty close to the spirit of Mary Boland in that book, yes.
Fabulous. Wonderful. So
yeah.
While you're writing it, you are having visitations from Mary Boland.
I was.
Yeah,
I really was.
Yeah,
yeah,
right. And so it went so well, you actually didn't stop there, right?
No. I completed the book. Actually, I should tell you this. I had started a novel before this one. It was called Daughters of Ireland, and I wanted to put three generations of women into this book. Mary Boland was the first, Nellie Kelly was the second, and Kate Halloran was the third. Those are all family names. But I had a very good friend who was a very successful published writer, and he read it, and he said, number one, it's too long. No publisher will publish it. It was like 800 pages.
No, really?
Yeah, 800 pages? Yeah,
wow.
It was long. Then
wow.
He said, each of these women deserve their own book. And I thought, yeah, I think he's right. So that's when I restarted the whole project. Obviously, this takes a long time. And I restarted the project with Mary Boland getting on the ship, and I made the first book totally about Mary Boland's life.
Okay, so you started to break it down then.
Yes, I had to.
Now, your second book, which was also in the theme
Lace
of...
Curtain.
Right. So
yes.
That was in the theme of the same family. It was in the, you know, it was the same ongoing saga.
Yeah.
So in Lace Curtains, the book continues, and the book is about the first book's daughter. Is that correct?
That's right. It's about Mary Boland's daughter, Nellie Kelly. And it's what I want to kind of express in those three novels is the fact that in Irish American, you know, like first, second generation Irish American people in America, there are three stratas of society. One is called Shanty Irish, and that is, you know, the people who came over. They're often illiterate, they're not educated, and they're really survivors. I mean, they are heroic survivors. And that was Shanty Gold. That was the first one. Although Mary Boland did manage to get herself educated to, you know, read and write. And she did become a midwife because her mother had been a midwife in Ireland and had taught her many of the skills of that. So she became the midwife. But in the second book, Lace Curtain, is when the family has now risen to sort of middle class status. And they have a daughter named Nellie. And so Nellie, her goal is to get an education and to become a teacher. And I was shocked to learn that in that time period in Ireland, when Nellie was growing up, which was like 1870s, the first high school for women opened in Boston in the 1870s, and she was among the first class in that school. I mean, girls at that time did not get to have educations, you know, unless they were sent off to a finishing school to prepare them to be wives and mothers to rich men. And yeah, that was the truth of it. So anyway, and it was very convenient when during my research that Wellesley College opened in Boston around that time. So Nellie was able to go to Wellesley and to
Oh wow, she went to Wellesley, did she?
She went to Wellesley. She did. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you. Right, yeah. as you were writing and you were researching, were you able to find any, you know, any evidence or any connecting the dots on the, you know, the details of this? I know you were doing your family tree and all of that. Were you able to see any real data on this being somewhat or possibly true?
Well, not the second book so much, but I traveled a lot for the second book. I went to Boston and I went to Philadelphia trying to get a sense of what the time was about. And the man that helped me the most was a young man, very young man, who was a docent on USS Constitution, Old Ironsides.
Mm-hmm. What's a docent, by the way? What's a docent?
He's like the one who manages the museum at the USS Constitution.
I see. Uh-huh.
And his background was, you know, in history. So he could tell me so much about what Boston was like in those days. And that, like, for instance, Mary Boland got a job in a pub. And she was allowed to sleep in the basement of the pub. And he said that was okay because that was like the warmest place in the building. And so she slept on a straw mattress down in the basement of the pub for years until she married. And even during that time she became a practicing midwife.
Wow.
This was
close to reality then, in other words.
As close to reality as it could get, yes.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, I'm just curious because I know a lot of times when people write, they do a lot of research and they see if they can, you know, bring it, you know, like into perspective for the book. So obviously you were able to do that.
Absolutely. And yeah, and you really, if you're going to write historical fiction, you really have to do your research, because if you mess up, someone's going to find out. Someone, you know, is going to read the book who is a historian, and they're going to catch you on it. That's for sure. So yeah, I think my research was pretty impeccable for all of these books. Yeah.
Fantastic. So that was book number two. So now you've got a trilogy going. And we want to talk about getting it published, and we want to talk about all of that. We're going to have to take a short break. I can't believe the first part of the show has whizzed by. But when we come back, let's talk about how you got your books published before we get into the end of the trilogy, and then the really, really fascinating and timely book, Yellow, that you've written, which is about journalism and TV news. So don't go away, everybody. We're going to be back in 1 minute, with Jean, and we will continue this really great conversation. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
Back with Jean Charters, who is the author of a trilogy, an Irish trilogy, which originated out of her own ancestry, and also the author of a very timely and intriguing and cautionary tale, a book called Yellow. So, Jean, before the break, we were talking about, you know, your books. So you wrote the book, the first book. What was it like getting that published? Because you went on to write two more. So how did you get the, you know, the wheels going on that very first book?
It took me almost 10 years.
Wow, to get it published, huh?
Yes, because I think it was an ego need. I needed to be able to acquire an agent, a literary agent. And that is just the most self-defeating effort I can ever tell anyone, because, you know, everyone thinks they want to write a book, most people, and everyone has a book in their heart, but the practical stuff about getting a book published in this world is very tough. Number one, I would say sit down and start. And just for other writers out there, and I hope you're all healthy, by the way. I have allergies. I'm fine, but my throat is sore from allergies. But anyway, number one thing is you got to sit down and you got to start. You got to sit down at your tablet or with your computer or with however you want to write it. And you do have to, you know, you have to start writing. I was lucky in that I was writing for magazines and newspapers here. So I was kind of in the practice of, you know, disciplining myself to do that. But I started. Number two, I took a lot of classes on how to write a novel. Some of them were online, but most of them were physical classes. That is, I think, very, very important. We all think, oh, you sit down and you write. No, there are formats. There are structures that you have to follow before an agent would ever even look at your manuscript. I think another really important thing is to join a very good writer's critique group. The one I'm in now, it's four women. We all write different genres. It took me six tries to find this group. I mean, I was in, you know, a critique group can be very, very defeating if they're not in it for the right reason. And I was in a few that were a little tough, but these four women are wonderful. Commit to a daily schedule of writing, even if it's only an hour. Commit.
So what you're saying is, and you know that I've also written a book, and
yes,
that was an agony. I think one of the things that's interesting when I talk to fellow writers is most people say the same thing, and women especially, it's really giving birth. And that's
yes.
No joke. I mean, it's not a joke. It is
no,
about giving birth. And
yes.
I know for me, I don't know how it was for you, but I sat for 7 to 8 months in a chair. And I'm telling you, I was never the same afterwards. You know, they talk about, you know, a sitting shortens your life. I really believe that.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord, the agony, the back pain, everything else. But writing is about, it's really about digging inward and pulling out inspired communication. It's
yes.
very heavy duty. And personally, you know, I know there are a couple of more books that I'm supposed to write, but I dread the idea of it. It's
just, I understand
so,
that.
It's yes. so intense. I don't, how do these, I mean, I'm sure you have favorite authors. I have favorite authors. John Grisholm is one of my all-time favorite authors. I just wonder how, in God's name, are they using ghostwriters? How do people crank out these books once a year? I don't understand. You know?
I think a lot of them, not all of them, but I think like the very top level writers like John Grisham, you know, are, I don't know about him, but I think some of them do use some, you know, they get help. They have other people writing, someone that can pick up their style and write. I know they do. I've heard they do. But for your normal writer, I don't know how they crank out so many books. I just don't know, because it's grueling. It is, you know, and you think you have a finished product and you look at it and there's always a mistake. It's frustrating. That's why I say a critique group is a good idea.
Yes, I think it is a good idea. But, you know, I do know writers. I know one woman who's been writing for 20 years. And the truth of the matter is that she simply can't get past the group. You know, if somebody says something to her, you know, criticizes her book, she's like out of her mind. You know, it's like, oh, no, I've got to start all over again.
I think it
can be a catch-22, don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you, yes. Yeah. And that's really understandable. I mean, as you say, it's like giving birth, and all of a sudden somebody looks at your baby and says, "That's an ugly kid." You know, that's how it was. It
right. So let's get back to your process. You had to find, you know, a rep, right?
Yes, there's a website. excuse me. There's a website called agentquery.com, and it's pretty good. I didn't get my agent that way, but it's pretty good. And you know, you can go in on there and you can put in what your genre is. You can, you know, and they, you can come up with agents who rep that genre, and just, you have to send out query letters to all of them. Fortunately, nowadays it's email mostly. And if you catch an agent's attention with your first 10 pages or your first chapter, they may ask for the manuscript, and you're like, yippee, I've got it. No, you probably don't. Agents are tough. I mean, I had a really big agent in the beginning, and I was so excited. And after a year of waiting for her to do something, nothing happened. And so I resigned that and started all over again. it's a very difficult process. I also would go to, oh, another thing a writer should do is probably subscribe to Writer's Digest.
Okay.
A lot of good information in that magazine. And I went to New York City to a Writer's Digest pitch slam, it was called, which they had all these New York agents in there. And I, you know, you have like literally 2 minutes, I think it was, to sit down with an agent and tell her what your book's about. And if she's into, or she or he is interested, they'll ask for the manuscript. Well, I probably saw about 6 agents in that, because you only have a half an hour. And I saw 6 of them. They asked, a lot of them acted interested. I would send off the materials and get rejected again. So it was pretty brutal. I mean, you know, as I say, a book is your baby. And everyone is saying, no, I don't like it. Or not, I don't like it, but it doesn't fit into my list. Or, you know, all these things, all these other things. So anyway, I finally got an agent. Another writer told me that she was accepting queries. I sent it off. I was about ready to quit. And I sent off Shani Gold, and she said, I'll be back to you in 6 weeks. I wrote in my day timer, you know, like 3 days before 6 weeks to contact her again. But before that, she got back to me in probably 2 weeks and offered to represent me. It was just, you know, lucky.
Wow. So you must have, you thought you hit gold and not Shanty Gold. You thought you hit gold.
I thought I hit gold. I did. Yeah.
But, that's really wonderful. So now, you know, you had your book published. How was it received that you were encouraged to go on to write the second book?
The reviews were wonderful. Both the critical and the reader reviews were wonderful. And I knew it was good. It was a good book. I tend to write books that grab you early, which is critically important. You got to grab them literally on the first page in today's world, and then, you know, keep them turning pages. The way I do that is when I end a chapter, I usually have like a question in the air of what's going to happen next? How's she going to survive this? All that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're driven usually to go on to the next chapter. My chapters tend to be short. And that, you know, that's how my process. That's different.
I have to thank you. I cannot bear when I'm reading a book and I have to go 40 pages to get to the end of a chapter.
Yeah.
And I love short chapters, so thank you, Jean. Thank you. I wish more people, you know, would adapt that. I think today, I mean, I've been a lifelong reader, but today we're moving so much faster through written material, you know?
Absolutely. And you have to realize that mostly today's readers have, you know, they don't have the kind of attention span they used to have. You know, we're used to quick solutions and
exactly.
Television and stuff like that. And that was why television was a very good background for me as a writer, because you got 30 seconds or 60 seconds to tell your story. So, you know, you have to learn to write quickly. I think that's my process. Everyone is different. But yeah, that's my process. Also in writing, when I start a novel, I want to know how it starts and how it ends. And I don't know anything about the middle. And I kind of trust in my instincts and my dreams and all of that to inform me through the middle. And it's worked so far.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you developed a rhythm and a template for writing the books. So
yes.
The first book was a success. And how soon after the first book did you write the second and third? Because I want to finish this part of the interview, because I want to talk about Yellow, because that's really an exciting topic. How soon after the first book did you complete the second and third book?
Well, let me correct one thing. The third book is not completed. I'm still writing it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Lace Curtain, I did complete and got that published. My publisher, I have a contract to write, the three Irish books. Excuse me. I have a publisher that will write those books, okay, or will publish them. So I gave myself, after I completed Shanty Gold, I gave myself about 2 or 3 months off, you know, and I try to clear my head of that. And then I sat down and started on Lace Curtain. And that takes about a year, a good year, you know, to complete a novel like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked on Lace Curtain and sent it to my publisher, and I got a good editor, and, you know, we worked through that. So that was good. Now I'm, as I said, now I'm working on the Silk Stocking, which is like when the, you know, the Irish have arrived in America, they're beginning to make some money.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, it's like every immigrant story. It takes a couple of generations to get there. They're beginning to make some money. They're becoming lawyers. They're becoming, you know, many, many politicians, certainly. And that, you know, that's what Silk Stocking. What I really want to show in Silk Stocking, though, is that everything is not as wonderful as you think when you get into the upper echelons. That presents its own challenges to women.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. So you're saying that, you know, these, you know, immigrants were struggling to get ahead, and once they got ahead, it had its own difficulties.
Absolutely. Every single level of immigrants coming to this country have had their own particular struggles, and you know, you have to honor all of them, and that's what I've tried to do in my writing.
Mm-hmm. So are you pretty much, when you're done with this, are you pretty much done?
I think so. I at least on that topic, you know, I have to have something that really inspires me. I have to feel as though there's a message I want to get out in a novel.
Right.
And yeah, so I think on this particular topic, certainly Silk Stocking will be the last one.
And I'm sure you want your grandmother to be pleased, right?
Yeah,
your great grandmother.
Yes.
You would really want her to be pleased. Jean, we're gonna take another break. When we come back, let's talk about your book Yellow. Now, you were working in, as I like to call, the belly of the beast in media.
Yeah.
You were right there in the middle of it, and you were a woman working in media, and you had to be real good at what you did. So you know about news. You knew about fake news before it was fake news.
Yes, I did.
And so when we come back from the break, I would love to talk about your book, Yellow, and talk about, you know, is it based on real people? Because it sounds so familiar with what we're going through today. So everybody, don't go anywhere. We're going to be back with Jean very shortly, Jean Charters. We're going to take a short break, and she's going to talk to us after the break about her new book called Yellow.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org. www.healthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of Health Corp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
And we are back with Jean Charters. Jean is an author. She has written a series of a trilogy on really, although these are novels, it's about her great-grandmother, in essence, and the Irish immigration to America. And she is also the author of a book called Yellow, which is about the media, working within the news and the media, which she did as a professional for many years. So, Jean, you can tell, you can get down and dirty. You can give us the inside here, the inside scoop. Okay, you wrote a book about it's kind of like the movie Network. Do you remember that movie Network?
Yeah,
it was.
Yes,
I'm sure you remember it.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to put it.
And I'm not going. Yeah, that's right. So the thing is, tell us. I mean, this was, you know, write about what you don't know about what you do know. So. This was something you did know very well, a field,
yes.
a work that you did. But you also wrote about some things that you didn't know. And in doing so, it's kind of an expose, although it's a novel, so we can't really call it an expose. So tell us about this book, about your remarkable career in the industry. And
okay.
And what it all means. What does Yellow mean, and what is it? Who are the people? Are there people it's based on?
Okay. Okay. Yellow means is a reference to yellow journalism, which when I started out in television, that was like the biggest slander you could ever give to a television station was that they were yellow journalists. They were just so principled. I mean, I'm talking though the time of on the networks, we had Dan Rather, David Brinkley, Walter Cronkite, you know, people of that caliber. And what the, you know, you could not talk to them or any local anchor in a local town and talk to them and say, hey, you know, I've got this client. I want you to give them a break. I want you to, you know, they're kind of slimy, but I want you to kind of not talk about all the slimy things they're doing. That was just not, that was the furthest thing from anybody's marketing side mind. And then, you know, I was a vice president of marketing for Viacom Television. What that entailed was traveling to Viacom stations and developing programs for either local retailers or the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I did a lot of work for them. And when I would go to these stations, I would work with the sales department, the news department, production, engineering, you know, all of it. I worked in every department in that station. And we would have like a local anchor or a local meteorologist as our spokesperson on campaigns and things like that. And after hours, you know, sometimes we'd all go out for a drink or something, and I would hear the news directors beginning to complain that they were getting pressure. Now, these are local news directors. I'm talking like Philadelphia, New York, you know, the people who are the local news, not network. But they were kind of complaining that they were beginning to get pressure from corporations and or politicians to slant their news in a certain direction. And that was back during the 80s. And, you know, they were all pretty principled people, and they didn't want to do that. So that was the basic direction for Yellow. I have a woman who is a principal news director in Philadelphia at the best television station in Pennsylvania. And what I want to show in this book, what I'm showing, is that before there was a Me Too, before fake news, and before tribal politics, the seeds were being planted.
Yeah, I would think so. Well, you and I talked about this. The 80s was a mid-80s on was a really major a slow 180 change that has taken place
culturally. Definitely.
Culturally, and yes. And it's been kind of shocking because for those of us who were around in the 80s, you know, working in the field, and I was in media back in the 80s as well. I've had a dual career in medicine and media. Things really changed. It started to become very apparent by the mid-90s. So your character in the book is dealing with the pressure, is dealing with this. And as we know today, many people are aware that media today, there are two camps. Now, you talked about this in the pre-interview. You said there are six corporations that run all the media today.
Yes.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah, during the 80s, there were so many laws that you couldn't own a television station, and I'm talking a local television station. You couldn't own a local television station in a market and also own a newspaper and also own a radio station. You know, they were trying to keep monopolies out of communications. That's all changed.
Sure.
That's all changed now. And there were television stations then that were owned and operated by families in many cases, you know, and also by small companies. They weren't gigantic. I mean, probably in the major market, there were at least, you know, 80 ownerships that owned and controlled media. Today, they are owned by six. And that's kind of why when you look at one television station and you look at another television station, and they're kind of similar. I mean, you know, the local newses and even the network newses are kind of like very, very similar. And their formula, they're formatted in such a way, you know, disaster, 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 bad news, and then at the end of it, they give you a nice, soft, lovely human interest story. And I personally am bored to death with that. But, you know, anyway, back in the 80s, when I was doing this, there were three major networks. There was no Fox News. There were no cable. So, you know, there's three major networks, and these three major networks were owned by myriad companies. Now it's six. So, you know, they own television stations, cable, movie studios, newspapers, magazines, publishing, music, and even, you know, many websites. So they can control a lot. And what's scary to me is their control politically.
I mean, I can't believe that we're coming to the end of our time on this interview, but I think the importance of your book, Yellow, is you're an insider. You spent many years in the industry. And
yes.
You actually saw the development and the evolution of what many people are seriously complaining about today.
Yes.
Which is the unfortunate reality of, influence peddling, if you will, or whatever you want to call it. I mean, a lot of people are very upset at the idea that, you know, we're not getting news that is meant to just report the facts. We're getting news that is actually meant to influence and in some places manipulate. Jean, it has been really terrific talking to you. I wish we had a lot of time to pick your brain about the news business, because there's so much to say about it. And you were a real pioneer there as one of the first women to do the work that you did. So thanks for that. Thanks for breaking that glass ceiling. Thank you for sharing your stories. And I'm sure we could continue to talk some more, because you have so many different facets to the work that you're doing. But I thank you so much for coming on and sharing your great grandmother and your work and the insider's novel that you wrote. That is, kind of a little scary, but all too close to reality right now. So, Jean, thank you so much. And
thank you so much, Georgiana. And please stay safe. Tell everyone out there to stay safe.
Yes, we will. Listeners, you heard it from Jean. Be safe, and please join us again next week for another inspirational and informative program here on Living Above the Drama.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-4325. Heal. Call now.